and welcome to Committing to Cloud Native. This episode is going to be a little different. After publishing 17 episodes this year, we want to take a look back at our most popular ones. So, Justin Dorfman, you ready? Let's just get into it.
Let's do it.
So, let's start out with the best one we had, I believe. I mean, personally, it was pretty awesome. This was episode number 8, Learning in Public with Kelsey Hightower. Justin, what did you think about that?
I agree. It was our greatest episode for sure. And the audience agreed. It's the most popular in terms of downloads. Kelsey has a plethora of information to share with the world. He's just overall just a really, really great guest. And we're very lucky to have him. And thank you to Zuri for hooking that up, because there's no way I could have pulled it off. So. Yeah, there's a lot of cool things here. You know, he's got the no code. In fact, you know what? Let's just listen to that clip.
How did you come up with this idea of no code originally? What was the trigger?
To be honest, I was for my job, I work at Google. So I was in Mountain View. And when we're doing product work, you kind of whiteboard with the engineering team. I might go meet a few customers. You might go sit with a few startups and their engineering team. And then you're just scrolling through Hacker News, and it's like everyone has a new solution, new framework, new code, new libraries. And I just wanted to tweet, because I'm waiting for my flight from the airport. I just wanted to tweet like, we don't need any more code because there's a lot of existing things that work, or you hear about all this duplication, even on the same team. Someone writes the exact same class that you already have in the code base. And you're like, why didn't you at least do a search to see if that was already implemented? And then I said, you know, I got a little time. You know what would be funny? If I just made a GitHub repository called No Code. And then I was like, in Kelsey fashion, because I'm all about the docs, I wrote a tutorial, how to get started with no code and the benefits of no code. And
there's a design style guide. And
yeah, like how to contribute, right? And the contributing guide says, you don't. There's nothing to contribute to. Oh, so then I just posted it, closed my laptop. You get on the flight. And I'm like, and let me just kind of take a little quick nap. I opened up my laptop. And this thing was like Product Hunt. People had Medium posts. Twitter was blowing up. The stars were crazy. And then the coolest thing was someone issued a pull request. And the pull request had a blank title. It had a blank commit message. It had a blank body. Everything was blank. And it turned out this was a bug. This is like a GitHub bug. You're not supposed to be able to do that. And I think the GitHub team was like, you know what? We'll let it stand for this one. So this issue lives on as this blank issue that does absolutely nothing, changes absolutely nothing. And guess what? It adhered to the style guide, so I merged it.
And that was the only merge.
I think that's the only merge. I believe that's the only merge. I think I did a Docker file or something.
Nice.
I think inside of that Docker file, if you go download it, there's still a tarball up. If you download it and you cat what's inside, I think it says something like, are you serious? So it's like a little Easter egg in there. I don't know if I still left it up, but there's something to download.
Have you been releasing new versions since?
We're code complete. I mean, I haven't seen a compelling feature to add. I think we nailed it on the first release.
I agree. It's perfect.
I think what was great about that as well was that, you know, Kelsey joined us. He's the principal engineer and principal staff advocate at Google, right? For Google Cloud. And he's just a nice guy, as you can tell from that bit, right? He's just nice to talk to. And like all of our guests are nice, right? Everyone is nice, but it's great to see someone from Google with such just good vibes. So I was really appreciative of the no code bit. Let's move on to another guest who we had. So episode 9, we had Les Jackson on. He was a developer advocate at Marketplacer, and he told this awesome story about his YouTube channel and the .NET playbook and how that started and the idea behind his book on ASP.NET.
It was so serendipitous because I was watching YouTube on my TV. And since my search history had a bunch of cloud native and microservices into it, it recommended his video, one of his videos. And I was watching it. I was like, wow, this is really good free content. And I just wanted to reach out to him and say, hey, we need to have you on the show. And I think one cool thing hearing about his experience with writing a book, self-published versus going with a publisher, he says, choose self-publish. You're going to make a little more money and you're going to have a lot more control. So overall, just a great episode. And here we go. take a listen.
Yeah. What's your creative process and why were you interested in using Envoy to begin with to make microservices? You say you're really interested in them. What's there to be interested in?
Yeah, look, I think it's distributed computing generally is something that I think is an interesting concept. And I think it definitely has its place. I mean, one of the things I would just go back to is the whole microservices versus monolith. And I wouldn't even say which is best because I don't think there's an answer to that, is there really? So I think you look at what problems you have and then you adapt and you go with a particular solution, which is often a hybrid. So I mean, at the moment where we are predominantly a monolith, but we're probably looking at adopting, should I say, I would even call it microservices, but kind of devolved or decoupled services to some extent and using those where they make sense. But going back to why do I find microservices interesting? I think because you kind of mentioned possibly they're hard. So it's a bit of a problem. They're really not an easy thing to implement. And I totally understand why people maintain monoliths for such a long time, because going to a microservices architecture is very difficult. And so I think that just appeals to me to try and pick it apart. And I think I did mention that, again, I've looked at some reference architectures, and often what I like to do is pick them apart and kind of reverse engineer them to see if I can get them to work. Because often I can't get them to work out of the box. So they give you everything you need. You try and run them up and there's just this whole morass of errors. So I think, yeah, it's just a puzzle or a problem that I think I want to solve, really. And that's what I find challenging and interesting about them. And then what I would then do is just focus in on a particular part of that architecture. So the API gateway, for example, was one small part of that architecture. And what I was actually thinking and doing was I wanted to develop a course on microservices. So I started to think, okay, how would I structure this course? How would you even go about teaching something like that? And the way I kind of came up with was, okay, let's break this down and focus on individual components that you would teach your audience about that made sense, both technically and from a kind of a business perspective, why they need to exist. And so, yes, I picked API Gateway, I picked Envoy, but Envoy seemed to be something that is used quite widely. It's got quite a vibrant community around it. So I thought that's probably a kind of a relatively safe bet to start focusing some video content around. I mean, that's what you want to do as well. One of the things I think in this space is there's so many things that come out all the time, and you might put your money, you might back your horse on one particular technology, and then a few months later it's gone. It's irrelevant. And as a content creator, you want to make sure you're creating content that's got some longevity to it. So that's why I picked Envoy. Number one, I think it's going to be around for a while. It's got a vibrant community around it. And yeah, it seems to do the job well in terms of what an API gateway needs to do. So that's why I picked that. And then going back to this concept of developing a course, I would then look at the different components maybe that you would need to employ in a microservices and the architecture, such as the messaging between internal services. Do you go with gRPC? Do you use HTTP? Do you use a message bus? And focus in on those type of things, you know?
One of the things I really love about Les Jackson as well is that I went to university in Scotland, super love Scotland, mm-hmm. and Les joined us as a Scottish person from Australia. And it's just really cool to see cloud native being the entire world, right? It's not just in one center. It's not one thing, which leads us to our next guest, episode number 4 with Sergio Mendez. He's an SRE and professor and a CNCF ambassador to Guatemala. Sergio was just super fun to have on the podcast. He had such an awesome experience that he was able to share. What was your favorite part about that episode, Justin?
My favorite part of the episode was what happened after the episode. And the reason why Zuri and I started this podcast is we wanted to learn from others in the cloud native space. So I saw Sergio as a Linkerd hero, and I reached out to him and I was like, I want to have you on the podcast. I want to talk to you. And two things that he brings up is Rancher and Linkerd. And those are two contributions that he's working on for CuriFence. So it's just like really cool how action happens after this. And it was just a really great episode overall. And it's the third most popular, and there's a reason for that. So let's just take a listen.
Yeah, it was really fun. We play in that moment a lot with Rancher. We create that chatbots using containers, like in a serverless way. So in that moment, I used another project. No, it's not like, let's say that this kind of project that are incubating or that are like graduated or something, but this one project of one of the CNCF ambassadors, Alex from OpenFast. So yeah, we used that project at that moment.
Yeah. Alex is the man. Yeah, he's a cool dude.
Yeah, so in that moment, I remember that doesn't exist the Knative technology. Yeah, so in that moment, the only option for me was like to use OpenFast. So we used OpenFast to create these chatbots like serverless functions. So we call it these chatbots using Telegram and that kind of thing. So yeah, we just basically use Kubernetes, OpenFast, and some kind of machine learning models and NoSQL databases to store the logic of the chatbots and that kind of things. And the funny part is that right now I'm going to work for a company that builds chatbots for WhatsApp. So yeah.
That's awesome. Now, let me ask you a question. So I saw you pop up on a few places, and one thing was which I go to pretty much daily to get ideas from for CurieFence is Linkerd's site. So I saw that you were a Linkerd hero. You already mentioned Istio. How did you get involved with the Linkerd community? And tell me a little about that.
I think that I was exploring on the CNCF, let's say these projects that they already have, maybe exploring
the landscape.
The landscape. I was really curious about that. I remember that maybe I found it trying to search something about Istio, and I decided to try it. Well, where not to try a Linkerd? Seems like it could be really easy to understand or something. And I started to play with Linkerd. I say, oh my God, right now I think that I can understand Istio. So yeah, because Istio is like a service mesh plus another thing. It's a little bit more complicated, and that's another functionalities maybe outside of a service mesh. And Linkerd was essentially more like in the service mesh, pure service mesh side. So I decided to try that in that way. So I found like, well, this thing seems like it's very easy to experiment. So why not to try another kind of thing? So I say, well, why not to try something that I can show in the KubeCon? So I say, well, let's use Linkerd to split the traffic and try this thing. So that's when this talk comes to the KubeCon 2020. Yeah, I use a Linkerd and Kubernetes just to split the traffic for chatbots. It's like the second version of the job that I was doing that moment with these telco companies. But yeah.
I love that. So just work with chatbots is super cool. It's also really cool. It's just how much he's interested in teaching other people about cloud native. He's all about community involvement, all about getting people in Central America involved, which is, you know, the best. Getting involved into cloud native space is something that it's a journey that we all have to take. If we're in cloud native, we all have to get here somehow. Mm-hmm. Episode 10. We talked to Chris Ferreira about Kubernetes and how he got involved with Kubernetes, which is super fun, and how he got involved and became a core contributor to Istio in a pretty big way. Justin, thoughts?
Chris was a really great guest. You know, it's funny because on the CurieFence website, the picture we use for a quote, it looks like a mugshot. When we had him on the podcast, he was like very fun loving, like just totally different than the perception that you have on the mugshot pick. But yeah, overall, he's very, very knowledgeable. He had really a rich career in terms of the companies that he worked for, like Microsoft before joining Cisco, and also the accountability that he puts on himself and really just delivers for his team. So one of the things that he said in the beginning when he first started at Cisco, he's like, give me 6 months to change things. And if I'm not up to your standards, I'll resign. You know, so it's, that's what I'm talking about, the accountability. Like he really just puts it all out on the line, and you can just totally tell by the way he has succeeded in his career. So yeah, let's see what Chris is up to.
At the time, Kubernetes was a whisper in the background, and we were still doing VM-based infrastructure. We were using Microsoft Service Fabric at the time, and it was okay. But shortly after that, I got introduced to Kubernetes. And I don't want to say it was love at first sight, but it was pretty darn close. I really liked the simplicity. I'm a very simplistic person. If it's overcomplicated and it's over-engineered, people just didn't understand the problem well enough, in my opinion. So when I looked at Kubernetes, I was like, okay, so something simple. You pass it in, you execute, it dies. That's the way things should be looking like. And I adapted to it pretty quickly. I became a code contributor to the open source community. And I did a whole lot of things for Microsoft in that area for a good amount of time. Until I'd say around 2017-ish, I get wind of this product that was being developed by Google and IBM and the folks over at Lyft in Istio. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, I see what they're trying to do here. And it's what every company always strives to do. But in some way or another, we always kind of screw it up somewhere. If we miss an execution step, if we miss a specific task in a specific area, and we end up like DDoSing ourselves as we scale. The service mesh wasn't really a defined term. I mean, there were things out there. There was Linkerd and other components that were out there, but they didn't do everything they were advertised to do. And I started kind of looking into this Istio thing. And this was around the 0.6, 0.7 timeframe. 1.0, I think, came out a couple of months later and started working with that, started tinkering with that, looking at that for different components in the Microsoft Cloud and AI group. And I brought that in-house and I brought it up to a GM at the time. And I said, look, I like what we do here. However, I think we can do better. And I would like to kind of do POC to put the platform into Kubernetes, into microservices. So I was embracing Linux at the time. .NET Core had just been released, so we could run our code in Linux and do everything we were trying to do. So I was like, why not? I made the pitch and I'm not going to call out names, but you know, it was too soon. Timing is everything. Folks were not ready to switch away from VM-based infrastructure into microservices. And the response I got was, no one's ever moved a multi-billion dollar ARR business into microservices. He was probably correct. I'm not going to lie, but like I said before, I'm pretty stubborn. So I went over to a group that was like, yeah, we're into that kind of stuff. Let's cut our teeth and get this going. And I went over there and I joined that group. This was the Dynamics AX, Dynamics 365 group. And we were building like ERP solutions and other components. And we started tinkering with Linux containers, doing code check-ins and doing things in the Kubernetes infrastructure and implementing the Istio service mesh with the Envoy proxy, handling communication paths and so on and so forth. And it was just fun. It was just a good time. We started doing things faster and we just got better. And certain components that were built in the legacy way to process them because they were on a single VM were taking like over a day to finish. And when we actually introduced those same components into horizontal pod autoscale, being able to scale out the compute resource and memory resources, we took down the day of processing to get to an output. We took it down to minutes. And when it finally came to customers, we're kind of blown away, right? So something that used to take them a day to get an output now took them minutes to get an output. And that's just one example of kind of what it brought. And we became code contributors to Istio in a pretty big way. Azure started to adopt it. A lot of Azure at the time was actually adopting Linux underneath the hood, where everything prior had been nothing but Microsoft. So
Windows XP. I'm joking.
Yeah. I mean, XP was a good one. XP was a good one. We can't knock XP.
For sure. XP was my favorite operating system when I used Windows. Sure.
I would say NT4 is my favorite one, and that's it.
You would, NT4. Yeah, no. We could throw away 2000. We can definitely throw away Windows 8. And some of those probably could have been skipped over, but XP was pretty good. I have no knocks on that. And server was okay. It kind of did its job. And
2003.
Yeah. Server was good. But when we made the switch over and we saw how things were going, and it became like a wave, and the wave started to build up. And as you actually saw the resources that were dedicated at the time to the Microsoft Service Fabric, which they made open source, the community didn't rally to it. So Microsoft saw it and was like, okay, well, if they're not going to rally to us, we're going to rally to them. and then became big contributors, and all the resources that were on Service Fabric were kind of swapped over to different things. A lot of them were reallocated to the work in AKS, the Azure Kubernetes Service. And that's kind of when it all started to kind of really shift over there.
So you talk about accountability in terms of employment. I think our last guest today on this clip episode, we hope you're enjoying this, just trip down memory lane for those of you who missed some of those episodes or just wanted to refresh, is episode 7 with Richard Lee. So he didn't go the employment route. He went straight out and built businesses on top of cloud native, on top of open source tools. Super awesome episode. Again, Richard is the co-founder and CEO of Ambassador Labs, done a ton of work. And here we're going to talk about the golden rules to building a successful open source company or project, the things you got to start with, the things you got to do, and how to make sure it all happens. Let's take a listen.
Given the open source aspect to the story, I would love if you could elaborate a little bit about, you know, to our listeners, to us, Curry fans as well, what are the rules, the ground rules, the golden rules that you would say to build a successful open source project? What are the one or two things we must do from the very beginning to keep the project interesting to the community and to get it out and simply reach out to those achievements, I would say?
Especially if you're a startup, I think the two areas I would focus on is make it easy to install and use. And then two, sort of correlated to that, is have good documentation. And the reason why I say if you're a startup is because if you're a startup, you don't have a lot of marketing brand and those kinds of things. And so developers just want to see that there's good documentation and they are able to try it and use it quickly. And that was a big thing. I actually wrote a lot of the original documentation for Ambassador, and I put a lot of effort into it. That was a big part of my job in the early days. And the exception is if you're a really big company like Google, you could ship something like Istio, which is actually quite impossible to use, but you could still get a lot of people to use it. So I would say if you're a big company, you can get away with shipping very complex software.
There you have it. Thank you, Richard. Justin, any comments on that episode?
It was just really nice to have Richard Lee on the podcast because, you know, he's super busy and he just like made the time to come out. He's got a rebranding on one of his CNCF projects that he went into. And it was just really great to hear how he created a successful CNCF project, which is something that I want to accomplish. And having him on to share his knowledge and just do's and do nots, you know, and his lessons that he's learned, it was just overall a really great episode. And I really appreciate him coming on.
I wish I'd been there for that, actually. I wasn't on that one. The only thing that was lacking was a tower. But Thank you so much for listening, everyone, as we took this trip down memory lane. I think these were some great episodes. Of course, we only covered a few of them, and we've published 17, now 18 episodes. So there are more to go back and listen to, and there are more coming up. We're excited about some of our future guests. I won't spoil it by saying what their names are, but do take a listen. And if you have any comments or thoughts, if you feel like we should have interviewed someone else and you want to make sure that they're on this podcast, send them our name. Get in touch. We are always available.
Yeah, just send us an email, podcast@curryfence.io. You can also hit up Twitter. Just send us a DM. DMs are open at Curry Fence. And thanks so much and have a great rest of your week.